think the commission understands. All right, I'm going to open the floor here for public testimony. Before I do that, let me ask a question. How many people in the audience here, please raise your hand, wishes to testify to keep the status quo? 25, 30. How many people here wish to testify for regulation change? About close to the same. All right, so let me do a little bit of math for everybody's thinking here. We got about 50 people. If I give you all 5 minutes, we're here for 5.5 hours. I don't think any of us want that. I think I can speak for the commission to say we don't want that. We have other business to do here later on today. So I'll open the floor here for somebody who wants to keep status quo and then somebody that wants to change. And we'll go like that for a while here. I would ask you all to keep your comments succinct and to the point and aimed at the issue before the commission, which is a regulation change and which one, or status quo. Let's not dive off into tangents elsewhere. Please keep it succinct. Please do not be repetitive if you've already heard somebody else say the same thing. So, who wants to testify in favor of making a change? Please come forward, sir. Matt, can I swear them all in ahead of time in mass?
This is just public comments. You don't
need to. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Thank you.
Hi. I'm Steve Jones. I own a piece of property on the Lynn Haven River. This all kind of got started when they tried to put a lease right behind our house between us and the Cavalier Golf and Yacht Club. A very highly congested area, houses, docks, everything, water skiers, kayakers using the area. Fortunately, we found out about it and said, what's going on here? Discovered as we got into it that 2,600 acres had been leased, unbeknownst to the property owners. I'd like to address, generally, we talked about legal things, and I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a guy that worked hard and earned enough money to be able to buy a house on the water, and I'm trying to protect the area around my house. But one of the things that I think is important about this is that if this goes badly and we don't get regulations to get this under control, and I'll grant you that 15 acres down next to the state park is not a problem. It's no issue at all. But when you have 2,600 acres that could drop cages in it tomorrow without any further discussion or regulation, it's a problem. I think that we've been violated the intent of the law, which says that you have to provide notification, and the methods that were done were totally inadequate. You can see by the uproar of all the residents that are now finding out that it's already been leased behind their houses. The other thing is about impairment to navigation. The whole Lynn Haven River Basin is shallow. I have a boat to drive, very fortunate. I've worked very hard. I have 150 employees. I have a good business. My boat drives 5 feet of water. The nominal depth through most of the area is about 7 feet. I've run aground in the middle of the Lynn Haven River before. It is shallow. If you put a 12-inch cage on the bottom, it's a hazard to navigation virtually anywhere in the river unless you go right down the middle. So we're talking about off from the shores. Most of the time, the water goes from zero and gradually comes up to 5 or 6 feet deep and maybe gets up to a maximum of 10 feet anywhere in the whole river basin. So when you take 12 inches of depth out of it, you have impaired the navigation of the river. So with respect to the intent of the 1997 law, we've been violating the law by issuing permits that would, by virtue of raising the bottom, impact navigation and be a danger. A water skier that falls on top of a cage that's 3 feet under the water is going to get injured. Virtually every boat that operates on the Lynn Haven River draws at least 2 feet on there. So if you put a cage in there, the tide varies 2.5 feet. So if you look at the depth of the river, we're pretty much in violation of the navigation parts of this thing just by virtue of making it shallower. So I think without beating the horse, I think everybody did a great job of looking at this. This 150-foot came up because the commission was loaded with oyster people that don't want to make any changes. What they want to do is to put commercial operations in 2,600 acres, plus more, because this one that we were fighting was behind our house. It's not included in the 2,600 acres. So they want to be able to go ahead and put their cages anywhere they want, operate how they want to. This is a major treasure to the Virginia. There is 4,000 houses, 4,000 business owners around this river. I mean, you know, 4,000 individual houses, 4,000 businesses. They average out about 50 employees per people because these people have money. It's a lot of industry that came to Virginia Beach to be on this river and use the river. So that's pretty much my comment, that it's a hazard to navigation and the regulation needs to be changed.
I have a question for Kevin.
Mr. Jones, please hang tight for a second. Mr. Zedner.
How do you have a pier?
Yes.
How long does that pier go out?
It's about 100 feet, but I happen to have a deep water cove, so it doesn't really go past my property. It's actually beside the depends on where you are. If you're in Broad Bay, you got to go out 200 and some feet to get to 5 feet of water. If you're, you know, most of the whole area is about 7 feet deep on average. It's 7 foot deep just about everywhere.
And if you were voting on the footage, comment for me the difference. But would you go for the 210 feet versus 150 feet?
Well, pretty much the 150 feet is virtually useless because for mean low water, you might get you out to a foot and a half depth of water. So if they dropped a cage in that area, in most of the places, it's not going to even get covered with water. So, you know, it's not that. I think the 500 foot that's covered in the fisheries regulation is a more reasonable amount. But I think when you're addressing this thing, when you start seeing a dock, and then you figure a guy's got to get to his dock, he's got to be able to right to pull off of his dock with the wind blowing or whatever else to make a circle, there's very, very little area within 500 feet of shoreline that would not be conflicted by access to people's docks. Because the lots are not that, you know, some of the places the lots are bigger, but most of the places you're lucky to have 200-foot frontage. So there's a dock every 200 feet. Well, when you draw a line off of that dock and then make a circle basin, how is the guy going to get in and out of his dock? So what they do is they come in and drop the cages in there. They stick a row of PVC pipes telling you got to stay in this little narrow area to get to your dock. You go out to the middle of the channel and follow a row of PVC pipes down the middle, which is what you could have now because they basically lease the whole river.
Thank you. Ms. Erskine.
Mr. Jones, I think I heard you say that important in your testimony was notification, that there was an area in particular to yourself that was pending, that you did protest. And so moving forward in this, as this regulation is suggesting, it seems to me like notification is a rather important piece, that the public is notified as to these leases, the proposed leases applications moving forward. Would you support an improved or modified notification process in the future?
Yeah, because anything else happens around, if I put my pier up, I had to notify every single person on the creek and everybody that had a house upstream that I was putting a pier in. And I had to, you know, register the letter. It wasn't like you got to just say, oh, by the way, I'm doing this. You have to go ahead and notify everybody. Same thing if somebody wants to go ahead and do something in their backyard that's got to get a permit from wetlands or something. These things get posted everywhere. Everybody's getting noticed. This leases are done in the dark.
If I could just follow up, sir.
Yes, sir.
Wharfing out is your by right. I mean, that's not a commission. That's a by right.
Right.
But when you do wharf out, according to possible modifications by the commission, you have the right to navigable water as a waterfront landowner.
Right.
You permanently take away that subaqueous ground, oyster ground, from being productive. So you permanently remove it, you know, from the Commonwealth to be able to make it productive. So it's a little bit like talking about apples and oranges from somebody that's a leaseholder that's trying to make the ground, you know, productive, albeit not all 2,600 acres or so that you're talking about. But I was just interested in your take on the notification process moving forward, because I think it seemed like from the work group, consensus among an improved notification process, albeit not for the commission, that's a code change, but I was just interested in your take. So
yeah,
thank you.
I think that's critical, and I think what you find is that if you went back right now and said, well, all these leases have been in existence for a long time, and you got 15 acres that's being used. Okay? So, and this question about impact with only 15 acres being used is kind of a moot point. Nobody objects to 15 acres being used next to the state park. But when you look at 2,600 acres and having had that notification, personally, I think what we ought to do is just go to the judge and get him to throw out all the leases because of improper notification and go back to ground one and see, is it proper to go ahead and lease 2,600 acres of a highly used water area like we've got? I don't think anybody would have ever decided to lease that much of the area.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there someone who wishes to testify in favor of status quo? Mr. Osterlin had his hand up first.
Thank you. First of all, thank you to the commission and the staff for the tremendous amount of work that you put into this issue. Mr. Neal, you were in the hot seat. Thank you very much. I represent the Shellfish Growers of Virginia Association. And despite all the work that went into your efforts, we are opposed to any regulatory change. We believe that the commission already has the authority to regulate, mediate these types of conflicts. Mr. Stagg pointed out that the commission has already exercised that authority in previous cases. So we believe that you have the authority, you have the power, you have the capable staff to mediate these issues. The process that you have at your disposal has been in place for many years. It has been used effectively. It includes opportunities for all sides to have input in front of the commission. It even provides legal recourse in opposition to any decision that the commission does make. So we believe that you already have the authority and the power to mediate these issues. One further point, and it has to do with what Commissioner Erskine was referring to, the notification process. In your packets, you have a piece of draft legislation that the shellfish aquaculture industry has drafted to try to introduce into the legislature in 2017 that would require landowner notification for any new lease applications, and hopefully would prevent some of these user conflicts. Short and sweet.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Everybody take note. That's how you do it.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Zeger.
You've heard the testimony and also staff comments about in Lynn Haven, a 150-foot line would barely get out to 2 or 3 feet of water, for the gentleman testified to, and maybe a 210-foot would just get past their piers. Do you have a problem with a change that would put a 210-foot buffer?
Well, we're opposed to all changes to the regulation, sir. We believe that you guys already have the authority to, in that space of 150 to 500 feet, whatever it is, to adjudicate the conflict and make a decision based on your staff recommendations.
Thank you, sir. Raise a hand if you want to testify in favor of a change. Please come forward. Please state your name for the record, Rob.
Good morning. My name is Rob Fetter. I'm a waterfront enthusiast and environmentalist and a Lynn Haven homeowner. I appreciate the opportunity to present. I'm not here because I really want to be here that badly. I'm not part of a lobby. And I assure you that my home waterfront property does not produce any income whatsoever. In fact, it's a pretty big money pit. I'm just here to support Provision J. I think that notification at this point really is inadequate. With all the land that's already leased, pretty much the entire river bottom is already leased, the correct way to give everybody that's got a stake, including homeowners and others, is to invoke this Provision J. As a homeowner, when the leases occurred, I didn't feel that the notification was adequate. The folks that put cages on my property, by the way, 17 acres doesn't sound like a lot, but when it's on your backyard, it's pretty clear and present, and it's an issue. Instant issue. Just add water. So The guys that put the cages in my property, actually a good bunch of guys. I actually appreciated making friends with them. They're a good bunch of guys. I have no ill will against any of the oystermen or any of the guys in my backyard. Good bunch of guys. I'm here to tell you, though, that the process was inappropriate that leased the property. I'll tell you about a provision that does work well. It's this one. There was another gentleman that has a larger lease that wanted to put some things above 12 inches. I got a certified letter. I had an opportunity to comment. I didn't comment because I thought it was a great idea, and it's kind of neat. You could see it out there. And so there are no issues with that from a homeowner perspective for different people that have interest in the Lynn Haven, including the boaters, and some of them are way out there. There's a little boat club that goes every Saturday and Sunday. This provision J is the way to go, to give everybody that's got an interest a voice in this really congested area of the river. So anyway, from just a homeowner, concerned homeowner, and a concerned person about how the river is used, I would appeal to you to do the right thing. And I know it's a tough decision for you. There's a lot of people that got a lot of stake, a lot of money being made. Let's face it, a lot of money being made. But, you know, just for all the different people that don't make money, that would like to enjoy the river, I appreciate you doing the right thing and approving this provision, Jay.
Mr. Erskine?
Yes, I just had a question. In your testimony, you referred to my backyard several times. Can you define what you mean by that comment?
It's been said, a couple things I want to address that with a little detail. It's been said that a lot of people buy waterfront property and they don't really understand what can and can't go on out there. I understand that I do not own outside mean low water. I understand that. But when you have a lease that abuts that mean low water line, and in my property it's only like 10 or 15 feet from the shoreline, that's basically, you know, you're looking right over your bank and there it is. So I fully understand that I don't own that property that's shown on the GIS maps. To be frank with you, a lot of the people that don't understand that, some of the GIS maps you see online, the city stuff, the real estate stuff, it shows the plat, but it doesn't really explain the laws very well. So there's a lot of confused people that don't understand it. I did understand it, and I knew people had the right to enjoy that area beyond Nemo water, but I had no idea that the state would ever allow basically what constitutes like a farming operation to go on out there. And I'll say this, there's a lot of difference between the folks that do the crabbing operation and oysters. Everybody knows it. It's intense. I really feel for the guys that do the oyster stuff. It's hard work. It's different. You're there for long hours taking care of that asset, but that is really not something that's appropriate for a residential area or an area where, as Mr. Jones has pointed out, goes from tide from 0 to 3 feet every day.
Mr. Ballard.
It sounded like, again, you were very concerned with notification and upset that this had gotten so far and so much had been leased up without folks knowing. My question is how do you think what your supporting item J, the 210 feet from mean low water, would actually address that issue?
The provision's got a lot of things built into it. It was actually fairly well thought out by whoever set it up. It's got some buffers already built into it. It's got a chance for people to comment on it. It's a very good, it's a very well-written provision. It just applies to things that are over 12 inches. But I'll tell you what, there's not a lot of difference when you put a 16-foot cage in, or a 16-inch cage in hopes it's going to settle into the bottom. A lot of the cages out there are 16 inches. So you're really skirting it's almost inappropriate to skirt that part of the law in such a shallow area. You say, well, 12 inches is okay, but you know, but 14 inches is not okay, and you gotta get a permit. It's really all very, very impactful in the watershed that we live in.
Mr. Neal.
This is really just clarification. Every option Ben has talked about is J. And so just saying you support J doesn't really tell us what you're supporting. I know what you're supporting. You're supporting the permitting option.
I do.
Okay.
I support the staff recommendation is what I support.
The staff recommendation, if I'm correct, is not a permitting. It's just a 210 buffer. Ben?
Staff recommendation is on the screen.
Yeah, I can't.
210-foot buffer with and you could still put cages within that area. The landowner within that jurisdiction
right.
specifically says he's okay.
Okay, but it's not requiring the that's not what came out of the preferred committee was the permitting.
Preferred committee was permits.
Right. And in the permitting process is notification of cages placement prior is what that's about.
So that's what I'm a proponent of. That particular provision that was already basically there for structures that are above 12 inches. Like I said, I received one. It was very adequate from my perspective. I didn't object to it, and they actually were installed in the Lynn Haven River as advertised. I think it's an appropriate process for this. Anything you can do really to satisfy these mutual interests is I'm supportive of.
Mr. Stagg, go over staff recommendation again, please. This is better.
Staff recommendation.
I think there's a nuance in here. I want everybody to understand.
He wants staff recommendation. He wants a permitting process.
Right.
Staff recommendation is in Virginia Beach, you would not be allowed to put cages up to 12 inches on your lease within 210 feet from the mean low water line if the landowner does not give his express written consent. Then your only option, if he objects, is to go through the permit process, which is part of this recommendation as well. So if the landowner says no, your only option is to go through the JPA or the fisheries permit, which does require notification, full notification, and you take your best shot with the commission as to whether we are going to approve it or not. It's already been objected to. It's going to be objected to again.
So the staff recommendation is the buffer zone here, there's no cages unless the property owner and everybody agrees on appropriate use of the number of cages, work hours, et cetera. If an agreement can't be reached, it drops into the permitting process. We go through the normal public interest review for either a JPA permit or a general permit number 4. There's public notification. If people can't decide to agree, it ends up here in a hearing like this, and the commission decides. Mr. Erskine.
Just further clarification, what you're talking about. These are existing and new cages.
Yeah, so this would apply to all new, and the existing would have this 18-month provision to seek landowner permission or get a permit.
Thank you.
And after that, they'd have to be removed.
I wanted to make sure everybody understood the nuances of the staff recommendation. Mr. France.
But the leaseholder is okay if he's past 210 feet?
Yep. Under this provision, this regulation would still apply beyond 210 feet. You could put leases on cages on your lease with no additional authorization.
Right. You don't have to get an agreement.
No notification. That's correct. This is residential areas only. This is the way this is written. The ones over by the state park would not be affected, even the ones that are right up against near the land, because it's not residential.
Mr. Fetter.
So let me just restate quickly. My recommendation is the permit provision, period, end of story. This particular provision, frankly, would benefit me, and I'm all for it, Ben. But I think for the broader good, for the other folks that enjoy the river, I think the permit process is the most fair and adequate way to cover the Lynn Haven watershed. And so I appreciate the opportunity to present. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And thank you for your attendance at all the work group meetings. Who wants to testify in favor of status quo? John?
I don't.
Thank you for
your
name. John Vigliotta with Board Oyster Company. I'm an aquaculture company, and I do not at this point support item J. My reason for not supporting it, and I do want to state to the property owners, I am sympathetic to your concerns. It's very difficult to make a regulation or legislation or law that addresses every possibility. Now, I'm looking at from what I'm hearing today, and that the average dock is 100, 150 feet, maybe 200 feet. What if you set 200 foot? 210 foot as your limit, and then you get somebody that really has to go out far. He's got 350 foot dock because it's just, you know, that's how far he has to go out to get deep water. So that would mean that they could be putting cages around that area near his dock that's in, you know, outside of that 210 foot. So you don't really get of full, you know, coverage for the protection that the property owners are looking for just by setting 210 foot. For me, and the thing that struck me the most is a couple of things. One, in the law that currently exists, it says specifically, no structures can cause more than minimal adverse effect on navigation. 210 is more than reasonable as a number, but that's already being addressed in the laws that you have on the books. It seems redundant to put new laws addressing something that really should be enforced already. If there is somebody that has cages that are near him and it's blocking his access to the water, a call to VMRC, and they should be removed. They shouldn't be there in the first place. The other thing, and I get it, the fear of the unknown, you know, and the first gentleman to speak, he brought up, you know, well, it's only 15 now, you know, but what it's going to be like when it gets to be 2,600. You know, I get that fear, but yet at the same time, you know, the likelihood of that is extremely, you know, unlikely. So the thing, I guess, all of those, if it tried to go from 15 acres to, say, 35 or 40 acres and people want it, it would end up before you all. And then you would have the opportunity to sit there and say things like, no, we're not going to approve this because there's a boating club that uses that on a regular basis, and that's just not a good location to put cages. Or you're blocking his pier, and he can't get to do the things that he wants to do. So the thing that I'm seeing from this whole thing is that these laws already exist. They just need to be, addressed from you all, which you do. And I feel sorry for you all because it's going to come before you over and over again, and it's doing that now. But I do agree that the notifications, and in fairness to the property owners, they should know what's going around them, as opposed to missing it in the paper and not having an opportunity to go before you and say, this doesn't work for me because of this reason. So that's just my opinion. I thank you for the opportunity to speak before you.
Thank you, sir. Who wishes to testify in favor of a regulatory change? Oh, come on. Somebody wants to. I know you do.
Hi, my name is John Corte. I served on the Lynn Haven Shellfish Work Group. Thank you, Commissioner Bull, for setting that up so that the use conflicts in the Lynn Haven could be addressed. And thank you, Ken, for leading that group through the process. I live off Broad Bay. I grew up in that area, and I actually live on a man-made canal. So I'm not affected by cages right off my beach, or ever will be, because I don't have a beach. I have a little canal that I go through, and it's man-made. However, I am a recreational boater. And I became alarmed by seeing warning signs in a heavy recreational boating area. Now, I feel that it's very difficult for this commission to understand how populated and how heavily used the waters are in Virginia Beach. And, you know, it's not at 5:30 a.m. in the morning when people are out working cages and stuff like that. It's on the weekends, and it is significant. We have roughly 4,000 waterfront homeowners, and we have close to 14,000 registered boats, recreational boats in Virginia Beach. And they get heavily used, and you can see it. Now, the area that we live in, if you're, you know, this is another difficulty. Unless you boat on the Lynn Haven, you will not realize this. On one side of it is fairly wide and shallow. And that's the eastern and western branches, and that's where the traditional Lynn Haven oyster was cultivated. And then you have on Broad Bay and Linkhorn, which is, you know, deep in the middle, and it's shallow on the edges. And it deep as far as good for water sports. I am a water sport enthusiast. And then Broad Bay borders First Landing State Park. I want to be the first to say I am concerned about First Landing State Park being isolated and not being able to be approached by boat. So you have that issue too, that what is the capacity limit that you can get with aquaculture? So, and there's kind of three scenarios that kind of come into play. We have leases that stem back for years in the Lynn Haven area, long before there was even the concept of aquaculture being used, and they've been dormant because basically the oyster industry was pretty much non-existent when Virginia Beach became a city. Now you have, in the last 10 or 15 years, you have the second scenario, which is people are now leasing because there was a gold rush trying to get the remaining land, and no one knew about it, and now they're all leased up, and then you get the final few where all of a sudden everybody knows about it. They know the public trust doctrine now, and they realize they got to complain. That's how this works. If you don't complain, you lose your chance. And that's kind of where we're at. So from my point of view, I view that the only fair option is the permit option. I think it gives everybody a chance to look at the scenarios of what's happening in the area. It gives you a chance to say, is there a capacity limit going on there? You know, is there too much aquaculture going in that area? And the other question, you know, is 15 acres too much? Now, we're talking about intensive use of the area. So, I mean, that's a little bit different. It's like, you know, it's when you have rows of cages put out, it's a different feeling than you have for, you know, just comparing 10 acres to 2,400 acres. It's like comparing apples to oranges because it's comparing intensive use to non-intensive use. So that's a little different scenario too. So let me just conclude. I think the current process is not working in a city like Virginia Beach. And you know, basically, I think that the permit process is the most fair way and equitable way for all parties to be treated in the Lynn Haven. Thank you.
Mr. Zedra.
Do you think the current process is not working because there's not proper notification? Is that what you're saying?
That's part of it. That's part of it.
What's the other part?
Well, the other part of it is you have to realize this is a kind of a transformation process that's going on in our area. So you have a seafood industry that now is kind of birthing and growing because of the water quality cleanup in that area. So you have this, and then you also have kind of these old leases that have just been passed along at, you know, you could put aquaculture anywhere in those leases. They didn't go through a notification process at all, you know, that would, you know, where you would have been using aquaculture for that. So there's kind of I was trying to outline the three rough scenarios that kind of go with that. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, so what you want is notification, even on existing leases, if they're going to go to aquaculture, so that and do that by the permit process so you can have a comment.
Exactly. All right. And if you think about it, doing the other one, you can still do the permits on top of that. So to me, it's kind of like, it's just making the whole process muddier anyways. And it doesn't address the capacity limits that you could run into, especially up against the park.
Thank you, John. Who wants to discuss status quo? Mr. Chalmers?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, my name is Hap Chalmers. I'm going to read this so I can get through it in your time limit.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Hap Chalmers. I live on the river, serve on the work group, and raise oysters. Civic leagues on the waterfront were given presentations containing a lot of misinformation, causing a lot of manufactured fears, and these fears dispel with facts. Large oyster operations, approximately 80% of the bottom is leased. However, only 20%, according to staff, of the bottom is suitable for the production of oysters. And by definition, if only 20% of the river is suitable for oysters, and this is shrinking due to runoff, only 80% plus will always be open to unrestricted boating. Aquaculture will always be a cottage industry in the Lynn Haven due to the lack of commercial waterfront to support large-scale operations and cost of labor. VMRC staff. Safety. The Virginia Beach Marine Police stated there has not been one single reported accident involving a boat and an oyster cage. Our operations are well marked for safety purposes in accordance to VMRC regulations. The view. This is a good one. We do not work on weekends or holidays when the river is used for recreation. When you are shown pictures of heavy recreational boating, please note the absence of watermen. When you are shown pictures of us working on the river, please note the scarcity of boaters. Extra low tides that happen once a month will expose some cages, but they are normally out of sight. Some of the property owners don't want any commercial activity inside of their backyards. However, if you check the streets for these waterfront neighborhoods Monday through Friday, you'll find the streets littered with commercial landscape trucks and trailers. This commercial view and activity apparently is acceptable because the alternative would be we'd have to do our own yards, me included. Not good. Stewardship. As people living on the water learn more about the environment and the ecology of the river, they become proponents of the oyster's contribution and make changes to their landscaping to contribute to a cleaner and healthier river. Even the oyster cage helps the homeowners. Each cage filters about 75,000 gallons a day and provides habitat for pipefish, seahorses, and many other critters who lost their habitat when hardened structures, bulkheads, replaced the natural shoreline. The cages also reduce erosion by breaking up wave action. Sanctuary reefs have been in the Linkhorn since 2007. Aquaculture expanded to supplement the sanctuary reefs, and now, it's about 4 years ago, it was still condemned, 4 or 5 years ago, but the aquaculture in Broad Bay moving clean water up, now most of Linkhorn is open. Bottom line, there's plenty of room for everyone on this river, and if you do nothing as I suggest, in 10 years, no one will remember what the fuss was about and we'll have clean water. I would like to make one more comment about the 500-foot rule, 150, and all of that. There's a lot of, when you start moving us out with 500 feet, now you're putting us in the heavy boating traffic area. The best places to raise oysters are closer to the shore. When I got my leases, staff would not let me go between docks or close to people's property. My lease was right out where, you know, I'm very happy with it. But anyway, you have the rules, obviously, because they're applied to me, and it made perfect sense to me not to, you know, I didn't want to go right up against their shorelines. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Who wants to testify in favor of making a regulatory change? Please come forward, sir.
Thank you. My name is Dave Hanzo, and I'd like to speak in favor of the Second Amendment, the second option.
Sir, what was your last name again?
Hanzo. H-A-N-D-Z-O. I learned how to spell it.
Thank you.
We're in favor of the Second Amendment, second option, because it's the one that gets landowners involved right from the beginning. And I think that's important, and I actually think that could be to the benefit of everyone, and actually could simplify this whole process for everyone. I think the natural human reaction, if you're a landowner, and I've been through this, is you find out that the bottoms have been leased well after the fact, or you find out that the that it's in process, and all of a sudden you feel like you're in this kind of adversarial process. Things are already rolling down the tracks. You don't even know what's going on. You don't know how to deal with it, and it becomes a huge kind of adversarial issue. And I think that's part of why you see a lot of the landowners coming in here today being very concerned. It's why you get as many protests to these leases as you do. If landowners, I think, were notified right at the beginning and given the opportunity to be involved in the process and give their consent, I believe that you'd actually work a lot of these things out without it ever having to come to here to be resolved. Speaking for myself, but I think speaking for most, I'm not opposed to aquaculture. I'm not opposed to, you know, having these cages somewhere in the water. Understand the benefits to the environment. Understand the financial benefits. I'm not trying to stop it. I'm trying to harmonize the things that the landowners are concerned about with the legitimate interests of the people who want to have the cages in the water. And it kind of seems to me that the best way to harmonize those is to start with the people who are actually involved in it, the watermen who are putting the cages there and the landowners who are right there. Let them get together right at the beginning of the process and try and work it out. And I actually believe that most of the time they can, and it'll just get resolved right there without having to come through a more process like this. I've heard it said earlier today that some of the issues could be resolved if cages go in places where they are interfering with navigation or are causing safety process. There's a process you could go through to address that. But I guess the question that arises in my mind is, why have to go through that formal process, which most people don't want to go through and maybe don't know how to go through? Why not just get people together at the beginning? I will tell you, full disclosure, I'm a lawyer. I'm not usually the guy who's talking about let's avoid formal process and get people together, but that's what makes sense in this case. So I think the Second Amendment, the second option, actually is going to make things easier and smoother because it makes people get together and try and work things out at the beginning, and I actually believe that they will. I also think it also addresses the very real notice issue that I think a number of folks have focused on. As a practical matter, the notice process right now really doesn't work. And again, I think that's why you have some of the uproar that you see, because people are just finding out all of a sudden that all of this has been going on, and they had no idea at all, and that is very upsetting to people. So give people notice at the beginning, give them a seat at the table at the beginning, and I think a lot of these problems are going to get resolved to everybody's satisfaction. I do want to talk briefly about the issue of how far out the buffer zone should go. I would suggest that it should go out to 210 feet. The reason for that is just given the fact that so much of the bay is so shallow, 100 whatever it is, 10 feet just doesn't do much for you. 210 feet is going to take care of most people. It's consistent with the sort of riparian leases that landowners are otherwise going to get. And it's consistent with the way we tend to use the waterfront. And that area out to 200 feet typically is very shallow. People who use it recreationally, as we do, are in that all the time. And it's, you know, you don't stick to a channel. If you're in a sailboat, if you're skiing, if you're pulling kids on a raft, you're in and out of that all over the place. Having those submerged structures can be dangerous as well as a problem for navigation. Again, we can work this out if we have a chance to talk about it in advance, but just going out 100 feet just doesn't get you where you need to go. The last thing I want to address is that I would urge you, although I know it's not on the table for today, to consider expanding this option beyond Virginia Beach to the rest of the state, because I think what will happen if you don't is that, as a practical matter, the same issues that arise here in Virginia Beach then arise every place else. You simply move the issues from one place to another. The issues are the same throughout. And so you're just going to have the same issues everywhere else. Some of this aquaculture is just going to move from Virginia Beach to other parts of the state, and you're going to have the same issue. I also think there may be a legal issue with respect to having this amendment apply just to Virginia Beach. Now, I will caution, I said I'm a lawyer, I'm not barred in Virginia, and I haven't looked at this particular issue, so I'm not here to venture any legal opinion. But just from my first-year law school, I would say that it's an issue that could be a real one that could be raised by both sides. So I would urge you to consider at some future point extending this. Well, first of all, urge you to adopt the second option of the Second Amendment, and then secondly, at some future point, to apply it to the rest of the state. So happy to answer any questions that anyone might have.
Mr. Zedron.
When you say, you know, I don't know about these particular options here. I'm confused. You see staff recommendation up there. Is that what you're proposing?
Yes, I think that's right. So doesn't get deployed without the consent of the landowner, which I think means in the first instance you want to deploy the cages, you have to go talk to the landowner, get their consent. If you don't, there's a process. But my hope and expectation is that by going to talk to the landowner, we're going to save everybody's time and effort and not have to go through that process.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for clarifying that.
I don't know which option.
Was just the testifying in favor of status quo? Please come forward.
Good morning, Mr. Commissioner, Associate Commissioners. My name is Kim Husky. I work for Ballard Fish and Oyster. I was also on the Lynn Haven River Work Group. I, too, would like to thank Dr. Neal for his participation and patience during those work group meetings. I would have to say I find it unfathomable that we are here today to talk about changing a regulation for less than 7 acres in one tributary in the state of Virginia. VMRC has the ability to deny a lease application for any reason. They have done that in the past. They have the authority to move cages for the right of navigation and can do so. We've heard testimony that they're working on that in Northern Virginia. They have the authority to do that in the Lynn Haven River as well. This is an overreaching, precedent-setting regulatory change that will have ramifications throughout the state. You have the obligation to think about how this regulatory change will impact industry, the citizens of Virginia, and the Commonwealth down the road. I know there are expectations here today to make a decision, and I know to do nothing is difficult. However, at a minimum, we have an attorney general's ruling pending and statewide factors to consider, and I would encourage you all here today to deny staff recommendation as it's stated. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Who wants to talk about changing regulation? Please come forward.
My name is John Aspinwall. I am a resident of Virginia Beach. I was on the committee that worked on this. To answer your question, sir, an average cage is 3 to 4 foot wide, and so that means you can put 3,600 cages in 1 acre. If you have 2,400 acres leased, that's 8,600,000 cages that are possible out there. So the citizens are thinking that the cages are just now starting. Where are they going to go? What's going on? How many are going to be out there 10 years from now? They will tell you that some of the bottom is unusable. But as we all know, structures change, technology changes, things changes. We know there's all these new sanctuary reefs coming in. The sanctuary reefs are going to clean up the water even more. So there's going to be more and more of the bottom can be used for these structures. So we think that the problem is only beginning. I am really in favor of this new amendment that they've done. You just can't imagine what a compromise that is. You can't imagine the way that Ben has crafted this thing and made it so it seems fair for all of us. The 210 feet is good. It's a whole lot better than the 150 we originally started on. I feel like that the oyster industry is a single-purpose group of people that has sort of snuck in under the radar. They're using a loophole in the law that allows them to put oyster industry right behind the homes of people who are
being denied their peaceful usage of their homes. This loophole is because the city is not able to control the oyster beds in the water bottom. So now you can have a commercial industry coming right up behind somebody's house. And that's not the way zoning laws are written, but we know zoning laws don't apply here. That's a loophole. I feel like it's very important for us to realize that the users of the Lynn Haven think this thing is just going to explode. And I want it to not get that way. I would love for you all to pass this and approve that. That's all I had for you. Anybody got any questions of what I said?
Thank you, John. Who wants to testify in favor of keeping status quo? Please go for it, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Thank you for the work that my name is Chris Ludford. I'm an oyster grower. I'm a resident of Virginia Beach. I'm a waterfront homeowner, but I live on a freshwater lake that does drain into the Lynn Haven. I wanted to, say thank you for the hard work and the effort. There's a number of things I'd like to say, but in the name of brevity, and you've heard me say some of them before, I'm going to try to enter some new ground. I'm a bridge builder. I'm a person that fosters relationships. I try to be a good steward of the river. I try to be a good steward of the resource. I reach out to homeowners every day when I'm out there on the river. We reached out to homeowners before this process started. I've always tried to keep a good dialogue. I want to be a good neighbor. We want to be good neighbors. I'm speaking to you right now on behalf of 11 growers on the Lynn Haven, probably at least 9 of them, maybe a couple that may not agree with me all the time, but I've been given permission by at least 8 or 9 of them. We want to let you know that we've been doing the right thing. We're going to continue to do the right thing, and that we are good stewards of the river. We're good stewards of the relationships. We're good stewards of the fostering and bridge building when we're given the chance. Some people may not speak as well as others, and they have those of us who do bridges, build those bridges, speak for them. We've been involved in the process every step of the way. I didn't miss one meeting trying to represent those interests. Also wanted to bring up that our main thing is for you to look at those packets. There's some information and comments, emails, just as Mr. Stagg has said, in the last 3 or 4 days, business days, Thursday, Friday, in support of us. We've been playing catch-up because it's harder for us to network. We can't network and we had a Civic League meeting that was canceled last week because of the weather. But the rest of the state is weighing in. There are people who deserve to eat seafood. They deserve to eat seafood from the Lynn Haven. They want to eat seafood from the Lynn Haven. They are now coming to our defense. They understand what we're trying to do is provide that seafood. Any changes at this time would restrict our ability to do that. It would restrict the very small a bit of expansion that some of us may be trying to do. Again, we're not bigger operations. So we want you to take that into consideration. At every step of the process, we've been able to, see that there's processes in place. I don't want to cover that again. But we're here to again, foster those relationships and do the right thing. Occasionally, we have guys that maybe step out of line and ruffle a feather. We try to talk to them. We try to ask them, hey, let's do this better. And if we can't, then we look at law enforcement to step in. We're already changing the footprint of what we're doing to address those issues. And I appreciate your time. One thing I want you to think about is in fostering those relationships and building those bridges, if you move forward with any or all of these regulations, what's going to happen when a homeowner sells? What if a homeowner moves? I've built that relationship and a new homeowner comes in. Where am I then? Where is my business then? Where are my customers? Where are the restaurants and the people and the citizens who depend on my product? Where is the state of Virginia when they depend on this taxes that I pay through the revenues that I generate, through my sales, through my fees? Where is all that going to go if that homeowner changes? I have to start a new relationship. It may take time. Am I going to pull up everything, uproot my entire operation? There are a lot of things that haven't been taken into consideration here, and I think that moving forward at this time would be not in the best interest of anyone involved. I appreciate you for your time. Thank you for your time. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Chris.